This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Thanks for being with us. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We appreciate you joining us on the program today. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love to have your questions for him in the next half an hour. You can call us at 765-496-1999. You can email ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. For those of you who can't see the mayor, and that would be everybody but me, I guess, you've got this nice long wintry-looking beard on, and some people have said they hardly recognized you when you walked in here today.
I know. I actually had to, kind of go through security to get back here. Yeah, it's my seasonal grow out. And the odd thing is, though, is when I first started doing this 10 years ago, it was a nice, dark, bushy beard. Now I'm starting to look more like Santa Claus and, less like a young guy. Maybe I should change.
If you stopped all that running, you'd look even more and more like Santa Claus.
I know, but that's one of those things. Stan, these radio shows are so stressful. That's what I got to do to keep my stress levels down.
You come on the radio to keep your stress level down?
No, I run
to keep my stress levels down. Oh, I got you. Okay. All right. Well, that makes better sense.
Always does.
So let's start with some stress-inducing things. We've had some questions come in from listeners.
Thanks for the heads up, buddy.
You're right. Yes, that's what we do around here. Joyce has written in. Joyce's question is not stressful. She says, I'd love to hear the rationale for removing parking places from Wabash Landing in front of stores like Panera along State Street and replacing that with parallel parking westbound on State Street.
Well, that's a great question, and it's not very stressful at all because it's a logical response. And if I continue to talk like this, you'll never get to it, right?
If you keep going round and round like that, we might
have to start the music up again. This is just going south.
This happens every month now.
No other mayors do this. Everybody else gives predictable answers.
You're not running for re-election, are you? I'm not going to have to deal
not
with this
today.
Forever.
Today.
Oh, great.
Anyway, when we started doing the concept for the State Street Plan, we realized that there were certain areas that we had bottlenecks, that created challenges, that really didn't have a great relationship with the people that were patronizing the businesses. So we felt because of certain businesses that are in, specifically Wabash Landing, we've got Panera's, and we have some of the other ones that, when you consider an hour time limit, really isn't conducive towards, for instance, having a business luncheon or even just having a meeting or else actually in some cases just having time to look around and stuff. So we thought making more parking available would be a better way to roll. The parallel parking actually allows for us to have a greater, I guess when you talk about having that boulevard appearance, that walking, biking sort of concept that we have through the entire State Street project, that is sort of an empowerment device towards that. And that's one of the biggest challenges we've had is as State Street is getting more open, if that's a real word. It's a concept at least, but I don't know if it's a real word. People are embracing that concept. We're getting a lot more pedestrian traffic down there. But it's funny. I was at an event over the weekend, and a lady came up to me, and she was very pointed in saying that I need to make sure as we're doing some of these designs and we're changing some of the traffic patterns that we need to be more respectful of our seniors. And her point was is that the angled parking, even though the hour time limit was somewhat of a problem, the angled parking was preferable to the parallel parking. But remember one thing. I mean, all these things, even though they're made of concrete and bricks and mortar and all that stuff, they're not permanent. If we need to revisit the parking concept, we'll go ahead and do so.
I will say one thing I haven't thought about until just now when pondering Joyce's question. If you've got that parallel parking heading westbound on State Street in front of the stores there, it seems to me mostly it has not been open yet. There's been very little time that people could actually park there.
Right.
There will be a time where it is fully open.
Sure.
And you'll have class in session. Maybe it'll be a morning rush or an afternoon rush, and somebody's going to want to go to, the coffee shop or something that's near there. And somebody will need to parallel park in one of those spaces. And so what you'll have is you'll have traffic go along, and somebody will put their turn signal on, and then they'll have to, back up.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, all of these cars, which are backing up along State Street anyway, we should point out, are going to be further backed up by having that parallel parking, whereas if it was the angled parking, you could just pull in and be done with it.
Yeah, the bus
stop. Is that going to cause problems?
The bus stop concept.
Right.
That's exactly what happened at bus stop. It could create a problem, yeah. But we are still having challenges with trying to get people to figure out that there's a lot more parking there than what is on the street. We've got that parking garage that the city just took over actually just this year. Our hope is that once we get that completed and once we do the redesign on it, that people will be more inclined to use it. But as it stands right now, we are very, you know, we as humans sometimes, you know, the programming that we have kind of keeps us doing the same things that we did prior to change. And with the parallel parking on State Street, we feel confident that with the slower speeds, the availability of additional parking, that people will be more inclined to use it. But insofar as the mechanics of parallel parking, that was actually one of the hardest things to do in driver's ed. Did you take driver's ed?
I did.
Yeah. Did you have to parallel park?
Thankfully not.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, we had to, and that was one of the hardest things to do. So we'll keep an eye on it, and if it gets to be a problem, then we'll go ahead and see what we can do to fix it.
Let's go on to a couple other things. Justin has another traffic-related question for you. He says, why was a roundabout not put in at the intersection of State Street and River Road when they were put in the two adjacent intersections?
That was when we started doing the preliminary designs for State Street. That was one of the biggest issues that we had. We really wanted to put a roundabout there, and it would have been like the whopper of roundabouts. But we felt for traffic flow, for consistency of traffic flow, and to keep things safe, specifically when you're talking about pedestrian traffic across that area, that would have been the best way to go. But the unfortunate reality of that was the cost. We would have had to purchase a lot of private property. And when we were looking at the overall bill for State Street, that basically prohibited us from being able to do that. And that's why we went ahead and did those islands at each junction there at that intersection. Is that to say that there will never be one there? Probably not in my tenure, but it is something that has been discussed, and it is a concept that we embrace, obviously, here in West Lafayette.
Karen has a number of questions about Happy Hollow Road, and I'll just read them to you. In no particular order they are. Why are the street lights on Happy Hollow Road lit up all the time? She says they disturb sleep and wildlife. Can you remove them? They waste electricity. She says the newly reconstructed Happy Hollow paved over our neighborhood flower bed at the Hollowood intersection. At a public meeting a couple of years ago, one of the planners or engineers said they would replace it. Can you arrange for a flower bed space? We neighbors will plant bulbs and flowers there and keep it weeded. So you can address those in whatever order you like.
The flower bed issue, we'll go ahead and look into that. Before we even started Happy Hollow, we had a huge neighborhood meeting. And I recall that issue being brought up. But at the time, I don't know that we made any commitments to do one thing or another because we weren't really settled. Or at least we really didn't have a permanent design plan. I'll go ahead and have our guys look at it and see if there's anything we can do.
What about the street light issue, which she says they're wasting energy they're on all the time?
Well, they're low use lights, and we have two sets of lights there. We have the lights that are the pedestrian lights, which are the ones that are on the 4-foot poles that are domed and point down to the trail, and then we have the decorative lights that go up and down the street. The reason why they were put there is that was one of the issues that was brought forward to us during our sensing sessions for the road. Happy Hollow. Can I tell an old guy story?
Sure.
Yeah, first off, I'm going to file a complaint. One of my whiskers got caught in this screen and it pulled it. It hurts.
And if only you had just shaved before you came to the show. I have no sympathy for you and your beard.
It's my fault, huh?
Yeah. If only you hadn't hidden your razor somewhere for the last month.
There you go. Anyway, when we were having the sensing sessions for that project, one of the issues that people brought forward to us was lighting. And if you remember Happy Hollow some years ago, there were no trails, there was no decorative fencing. It was just a road that moved traffic north and south throughout our city. So we obviously, as we look at how we're growing and we're looking at how we're designing roads, we feel it's important that we do things that's going to support this overriding concept of having our roads and trails bike and pedestrian friendly. And when you look at the lighting of those trail systems, it's imperative that we do so in such a way. Obviously, we don't want it to be invasive, but we want to make sure that it serves its purpose and does illuminate those particular pathways. We just finished those up this year. So we can go ahead and we can have our engineer's office have a look at it. But from what I've seen, I actually live off of Happy Hollow Road now. And I go out in the morning and walk my dog, and it's now dark, of course. But from what I've seen, they don't appear to be that invasive. But when you compare the lit situation versus the way it was before we put the lights up. I can see how that could be a challenge. We can go ahead and look at that, though.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with West Lafayette's John Dennis. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Email ask@WBAA.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. The Tippecanoe County Commissioners earlier this week voted to continue the county's needle exchange another year. You have been mostly opposed to that exchange. What do you make of their decision to have it be in existence for another year?
Well, I think, you know, if we're going to make this a true experiment, I think, you know, adding a little more time to it is going to help us do that. But my opposition hasn't been to the concept of the needle exchange program. I've always thought that, you know, if we have sick people out there, then we need to have a system in place that's going to allow for us to take care of that. And also, you know, preventing disease is also critically important for the quality of life in the community as well. But I'm an old policeman. You know, law enforcement was my gig for 23 years. And there are certain issues that are difficult for me to handle. And when I think about a needle exchange program, as I've said before, I think the program has to have a lot of controls on it. Now, I realize that could be something that would dissuade folks from taking advantage of it. But in the interim, I think that there needs to be somehow, some way of structuring so we get a better return on the needles. There has to be some way that we can reach out to these folks and not just provide, you know, safe processes for injecting drugs, but also try and get them off the drugs. You know, we can give out pamphlets until our heads cave in, and that's basically going to end up in the bin as they walk out the door. It would be great if we had some other system in place to try and get these folks treatment.
I got to say, you've brought up your prior career in law enforcement, as we've talked about this a couple of times, and you sound remarkably clear-headed about the idea
remarkably clear-headed?
Yes, especially for a police officer.
better you didn't call me a reindeer.
About the idea that you know that you go into this thinking about it with certain prejudices that you developed during your time in law enforcement.
And yet,
despite the fact that you acknowledge those, it's been hard for you, it sounds like, to get past those in your thinking about this issue. Would you say that's fair?
I would say that's fair, yes. And it is because I've seen, you know, and I hope we're not just getting, you know, too repetitive here. I've seen, you know, I've bought and sold drugs to these folks. I've been responsible for units that work that detail. And I've seen what happens to the families, to the friends. I've seen, you know, what happens to the addicts and what they do to themselves and their lives because of the addiction. And that's a tough issue. That's a tough image to get over. And when we as a community decide to say, okay, we are going to reprioritize this issue, we're going to do it from a health point of view, the healthcare perspective, and we realize that these people are behaving, they're involved in criminal behavior, they're doing stuff that's against the law, but they're also doing something that gives them a problem that they can communicate, a communicable disease such as HIV or Hep C. Because of my background, I see that there's a different source that we should apply resources to. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. The other side is a harder issue for me to embrace, even though I've been out of law enforcement now for 10 years. The memories of some of those circumstances and situations still ring true.
So the commissioners have said they want more data a year from now than they have currently. The county health officer, Dr. Jeremy Adler, presented a number of statistics, some of which were accepted by the commissioners, some of which were questioned by Tom Murtaugh, who was the one no vote on the board. And there's been questions about what really is the return rate. Commissioner Murtaugh said it's closer to 50%. Dr. Adler said, no, you're interpreting the numbers incorrectly. It's actually closer to 85%. He also pointed out that the numbers have been continuing to go up as you've had more needles go out from the exchange and then come back because they can identify which syringes those are. What kind of data do you need? Is there any sort of statistic they could give you where a year from now you would say, all right, I've changed my mind?
I think one of the better statistics would be cures. You know, we have dealt with these groups. You know, we've got, you know, human A through Z that have been coming here routinely. And these people are no longer using, and I don't know how we would go ahead and determine that. It'd have to be, you know, a good faith thing. But there has been some successes with treatment. There have been people that have gotten off drugs.
Let me drill down into that for a second. Mm-hmm. How would you determine that those are the case? Would you want anecdotes from people? Would you want a lowering of the total number of Hep C cases? What is it that you're looking for specifically?
Well, maybe the best, you know, anecdotal would probably be better than nothing. I don't know. And again, because of my experience on the other side of the issue, I don't know what the health department's authority actually is. I went to a meeting down there in the basement a couple weeks ago, and there was a very passionate discussion about this very issue, the needle exchange program. And the health department believes that this is not just, you know, the best thing to do. It's absolutely the best thing to do. There are people out there that are getting sick and are getting other people sick because of the diseases that are communicable, and it's a problem. And the health department, that's kind of like their banner. You know, we stop these kind of problems.
And sure enough, there was a statistic that was put out at the meeting on Monday that showed that there have already been more cases of Hep C this year than there were in all of last year.
Yeah. And so I get that. And plus, you know, we've talked about it before, but I've had some exposure to some pretty nasty stuff, too, in my lifetime. So I understand that. But a program, depending upon the audience that you're trying to serve, you know, a program that says we are going to encourage criminal behavior via the distribution of these devices that allow for people to use drugs, that's going to ring true to some because it's going to have the higher calling of the disease issue, but it's also going to ring pretty hollow to folks who spend their time either dealing with addicts or being victimized by addicts or something
to that
degree.
Okay, so let me put it to you this way. You're not a cop anymore.
Nope.
You are a mayor who has been fairly publicly forward about your skepticism at the very least about this program, if not outright opposition in some cases. What are you going to do for the next year to try to be fair about assessing the efficacy of this program? How are you going to determine whether you are getting the data, whether there's enough support for the program to make sure that it has a chance to produce this data? How do you see that as a municipal executive?
Well, what I understand now is that they're tracking this. You know, the health department is doing a great job of tracking all of the information that they're in a position to get. That's one good way to start. And then just talk to people. You know, that's always been the best source for me, is just getting out there and getting a sense of what people see and what people do and what they believe.
I have to say, there perhaps has not been an issue since you and I have been doing this program together that has generated more comments to our emails and our Twitter feed about your stances, your reactions, your opinions, and just about unilaterally questioning where you stand on this.
Sure. Well, and my point is that, you know, I'm not going to waffle. I believe the program in its totality, the spirit of the program is great. But from where we stand right now, the success has yet to be determined. You know, you get somebody that's on the extreme, not here, not now, not ever. You know, they want 100%. You know, they want to contain. They don't want needles out in the public. They don't want to have, you know, they don't want to encourage drug use. So they think, you know, sorry for your luck, Mr. Junkie. You just got to go somewhere else to get help. The other side is, and I think I'm leaning more towards that way, is the program has to have structure. You know, I know that there are folks that will say, because of the dependability of this population base, and I'm one of those that says it too, you're not going to get 100% compliance. They might not be in a position to even get the needles back to you, period. You know, we don't know what stresses they're going through in their life. But trust me, if they're addicted, they got a lot of problems, a lot more problems than worrying about bringing the needles back to the place. But there needs to be something that puts some structure and some controls on the program. You know, the health department and law enforcement and governments have run programs similar to this in the past, not necessarily dealing with something that's such a hot button item, but there have been goodwill programs that government has run in the past. Generally speaking, it doesn't involve criminal behavior. You're not sort of bridging health with crime. This is one of those issues, and it's real easy to pick a side on. It really is. You get the law enforcement folks, they're saying, you know, not only no, but hell no. You get the health code, the health side of the people, and they're saying, if not this, what? You know, we have people dying. If not this, what? It's a tough issue.
Let's get to a few more things in our last 10 minutes with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. And if you have a question, call 765-496-1999. Email ask@wbaa.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. And you can have your question here on Ask the Mayor. So State Street has reopened all the way to Airport Road again, mm-hmm. mere hours before the deadline to yeah. meet that end of the November construction season.
Yeah.
Why did it take that long based on the fact that we had a much warmer and milder and nearly precipitation-free fall than I think a lot of people would have predicted? It seems like that should have been able to be done earlier, especially based on the fact that we've said all along, you and others have said, well, look, there are these incentives that mm-hmm. if they get done earlier, they get more money back. And yet the day before mm-hmm. the month was to end, hey, we're done now.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? The only thing, you know, I'm not an engineer and I don't play one on TV, but a lot of that stuff that we take for granted, like the stuff that goes on underneath the roads, sometimes creates huge challenges for trying to build them. You know, they don't want to put a lot of heavy stuff on some stuff that's not going to support it. So when they're either doing relocates for the utilities or they're trying to figure out, you know, where the water is going to go, or they're looking at, you know, what's underneath the stuff that they're scraping up, that might require a whole different set of engineering processes, and those take time. The other thing is that with what we've done up to this point, we have been in a position to aggressively reroute traffic. If we need to shut a road down, you know, we put up all these barricades and we point people in the other directions and we have people directing traffic and all that stuff. With this last phase, they are now doing a couple things. They're reacclimating themselves to their old path to get from point A to point B. They're going on a road, excuse me, which is more narrow now. They're seeing a lot more interaction with pedestrians and bicyclists. They are like a lady told me when I was at an event over the weekend, you know, they're getting used to going two ways again. She said, we just got used to going one way and now you're flipping two ways. You're making this too hard. And it's like, I'm sorry. So there's a lot of different adjustments being made. And so when it comes to the timeline of the road, and this probably works more for the economics of the contractors that are doing it, they know an absolute line in the sand. So if they can get these other things squared away, they'll probably spend a little bit more time doing that, knowing that they can eventually reach that goal.
We've also talked about the fact that when you reopen part of it leading up to the beginning of the school year mm-hmm. in August, mm-hmm. the traffic lights were not timed. I asked you at the time, when are you going to do that? Let me ask you again, when are you going to get those traffic lights timed? Because, again, we still have traffic jams morning and afternoon along the state. Street.
And we probably here's the deal, and it's kind of weird. Part of the concept of State Street isn't just to make sure the vehicular traffic flows smooth and easy. Obviously, that's one of the primary points of it. But we're also looking at trying to change that dynamic. You know, you look at what we've done with our trail network. You look at what we've done with the trail system on State Street. You know, the hope would be maybe people will choose alternative means of transportation to get to work. Maybe the students that don't live on campus might ride bikes instead of driving cars there.
That's great, except for the fact that you have these things called seasons, and we're getting into one of the cold ones where you're probably not going to, if you're me and you live in Lafayette, you're not going to walk or bike across the river to campus to work.
Stan, come on, be a team player. The whole point is that the lighting itself, excuse me, the lighting itself is all going to be eventually clicked into where it's going to be more efficient.
What's eventually when?
Probably shortly after the road's completed. You know, the way these things work.
So not until 2019?
No. The State Street Road. We have this thing. It's called an MTS. It's a mobile something with a T and something with an S. I can't remember what the acronyms stand for. But basically what it is it's a data-driven synchronization of our lighting systems. And it takes a while to build up that data. So as soon as we got everything looped and everything's on, you know, the fiber, and we can sit there at our MDTs and look at how traffic's flowing, we can eventually regulate those so that it'll function more smoothly. But the weird thing about West Lafayette and Purdue is we have multiple rush hours. And you've got the rush hours involving students, the rush hours involving employees. You've got the rush hours of people coming to work, people going to work, visitors on campus, and then, God forbid, when we have our Purdue games. So it's a challenge that there isn't one singular answer to. There will always be at some point in time a traffic backup. You know, we've done the scramble, you know, where we have the four-way intersections we've done so the kids can all cross at one time, then the vehicles can go through the regular sequence. Those seem to work well. But what those do, depending upon the volume of pedestrian traffic that you have, that can back up traffic. We will always have a challenge trying to compete with parking garages. You know, when they hit the green light and everybody leaves and they go to the parking garage to get out and go to work, there's always going to be a backup. And when a good Samaritan allows for one person to get out of the parking garage, about five people follow. So that'll start traffic backing up in a different direction. And these are human things. You know, this is trying to engineer humanity, which really is a difficult thing to do. So the best thing that we can do is once we get our data, once we figure out the best sequencing to have, it should make things more smooth. But is it going to be perfect? Is it going to be like, you know, the Jetsons where you just hop in and you just head on out? No.
I want to talk about the new body cameras that your police department has signed a $350,000 contract for the next 5 years. Tell me, what were the ones that you had, and you were one of the first departments in the state, I think, to adopt this on a large-scale basis. What were those not doing that spending $70,000 a year for the next 5 years is going to allow you to do?
That, again, this is something that Chief Domkowski is much more well-versed on than I am. But my understanding was that we had a lot of challenges and a few things. First off, the imagery wasn't as sharp as it can be now. Second off, the
higher resolution photos.
Second off, the activation of the camera was a little more challenging than what we have now. And third, and probably, and another thing is that the actual device is like a cell phone. It's not like that little box that was sitting on the front of your vest. But the other thing was a storage. You know, everything that they record has to be kept because it's potentially evidence. And there's the public record stuff that you guys like to use. And so we, with the new product that we have, it goes immediately up to the cloud, wherever that is. And so that allows for us to save a lot of money on the front end. We don't have to buy storage systems. We don't have to buy servers for
that. So are you
that.
Saying that if somebody's out in the field and their body camera records something, it automatically uploads it to the cloud?
Once they finish their tour of duty, then they go ahead and it uploads when they get back
to the station.
Yeah, when they get done. Yeah.
And so what about the human element of this in our last 45 seconds or so? Because I understand that there are more ways now that these cameras are automatically triggered if the sirens go on or if an officer reaches for their gun or they fall down or something. Mm-hmm. How do you go about getting to a point where you've got 100% recording of the things that need to be recorded by officers? How do you take that sort of human element out of it?
Well, I think they're pretty close now. You know, they're pretty close to having that now. They are active. They run constantly. The officer, a guy showed me how these things work just a couple of weeks ago, but the officer has some control over it. But it's not as easy as the other ones were. The other ones you actually had to physically turn on. These are continuously recording. But I think where the discretion is once you go back, there is a process that you can go through, or you can actually turn it off and possibly, you know, prevent recording that way.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We've run out of it on this program, but happy holidays to you.
Same to you and yours,
Stan. And we will do it again in 2018.
I'll be here.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Send questions in advance to our email address, ask@wbaa.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.